Hi, my name is Beth Summers. I'm the Executive Director at Valley Stewardship Network here in Viroqua. And joining me here in the studio today, we have our Conservation Program Specialist, Shelley Brenneman. And we are thrilled today to have our founder, Kathy Fairchild, joining us to talk about the history of Valley Stewardship Network, how it got started, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the organization as it is now and where we're headed. Thanks so much for coming in, Kathy and Shelley.
Glad to be here.
Great to be with you here today.
Happy to be here with you both.
So just as an intro for anyone that isn't aware of Valley Stewardship Network and what we do, we work in the Kickapoo watershed and all the surrounding watersheds here in Southwest Wisconsin. And the mission of our organization is Valley Stewardship Network works to protect our land and waters through research, education, and community empowerment. So we work in a lot of different ways to do that, but a huge part of what we do is community involvement, pulling in community members and community groups to achieve that mission. So Kathy, I would love to just start with talking with you about how VSN originally came to be. What was the impetus for starting the organization and getting that going 25 years ago as we celebrate our 25th anniversary in 2025?
Sure. It kind of came from predominantly from Rob Horowitz's work with his nonprofit in Bermuda Landing in Belize, where he hit on the incredible breakthrough thought that if you empowered local communities to care about what they had before it was gone, they would protect it. And he did a very successful howler monkey project down there. But at the same time, I was working in the Soldiers Grove. And I don't know if you have too much sense of personal history, but in 1978, Soldiers Grove had a horrific flood that wiped out the town. And then you've seen the relocated town out on the highway now. But I was also working at the newspaper at that time, the Weekly, the Kickapoo Scout. And it was a great, great thing, but it was going to kill us if we had to keep staying up all night to lay out the paper and then driving it to Richland Center to get it printed, you know. So there was not a good thing. But it was a way to see community and how it functioned in times of duress, how it functioned against nature, how nature functioned against it. And kind of in the back of my mind, that was always there. And I have always worked as a bean counter, accounting and bookkeeping and that kind of stuff. And so everybody was always looking for those services, and as was Rob. And he needed a part-time office person. And I lived next door. It's that kind of happenstance, you know, that just happens. And so I worked for him for some time and part-time. You know, I had a little girl. And learned a lot about the smoke and mirrors approach to conservation, which he was very, very good at. He would go to World Wildlife and tout his projects, and he submitted papers constantly. I mean, he was really a global presence. And he just lived in this little funky house in Case Mills, you know, and it was pretty interesting to see. But we hit on one day, you know, why can't we do this here? Why can't we empower this neighborhood, you know? And he had a dear friend, John Lyon, who had helped him with Bermuda Landing and Belize, and he was in Madison doing a research thing. And they hit on this GIS grant, S3 software. And what we knew would have to happen was we'd have to get the kids involved. And we were trying to come up with some way to get into the schools. And this was in the late 90s, when everything suddenly switched over to teach to the test. And so we had about a year and a few months of success with going into classrooms with simple GIS software projects that the kids could do and map their neighborhood or map their school grounds or, you know, learn about the different layers that you could get, you know, in a GIS map and how exciting that was. And And then it was pretty much like the school just didn't have room or time. We gave them all these computers. I mean, it was incredible how much the school benefited from it at that time. But
so youth education really was early in the foundation of VSN, a huge part of
very much so. And then Trout Unlimited came through with the Home Rivers Initiative in 96, I think it was. And they identified trout as the species. And, of course, boom, we had our framework, you know. And so then it was water monitoring, which we had already kind of started with the kids at school just for, you know, looking at the bugs and getting them excited about the resource. And we would go to, back in the day when we had Kickapoo Country Fairs that Crop put out, or Organic Valley did, it was fun, that water was everything. You know, it all comes down to the water, and we had to protect the resource. And so we kind of operated on, first we had to teach people where what was a watershed and where were you and yours, you know, that you guys have, I'm sure, done some of that work as well. And we would go to the fairs with a big map, and you'd put your sticky notes on, and it was fun. And it was, I think, just sort of a process that just kind of grew out of itself, you know. More and more people were interested. And it was, it has to be noted, I think, that a lot of the energy of VSN was imported, you know, that it was people who came here and said, whoa, this is the neatest place I've ever been. This is the clearest water I've ever seen. This is very cool. How can we work to keep it this way? And people who, you know, it's like the age-old tale. You know, you don't miss it till it's gone. You don't see it because you see it every day, you know. And there was a little bit of realization that had to get shared. Why are all these outside people coming in wanting to measure the water? You know, oh, okay, now I get it. Runoff, okay, cool. You know, and it was like a low-key education on one hand and then a pretty direct education on the other. But a lot of enthusiastic retired professionals and people like that really added a lot to those early days. The struggle was we were getting by on about $11,500 a year.
And was Valley Stewardship Network mostly grant-funded or donation-funded in the beginning? Where were
you? It was some donations, but mostly grants. We had DNR planning grants. They were $10,000 a year. It's amazing what you can do with $10,000 when you have a lot of people who are willing to work for nothing, you know, just peanuts. And then Trout Unlimited came in, and they kicked in maybe another $5,000, $8,000, depending on their year, you know. And that was basically our operating budget. And then we decided we had to find something a little more sustainable. And so we started with, I don't know, how do you say, scatter grant applications to charitable foundations that might be interested in something like what we were doing. And lo and behold, the Grudemots came through, and we had $100,000. Which was a
wow.
Real... I've sat at the Country Kitchen restaurant with my little pitch book about wanting to do Kickapoo conversations and talk to the woman who was born in Reedstown and her husband, who were the foundation. And they said, well, that sounds pretty good. And then 2 days later, they contacted us and said, okay, we'll send you $100,000.
That must have felt huge.
It was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. It was like, boom, out of the park.
Yeah. Yeah. So talk about Kickapoo Conversations and how that got started and what it was.
Well, that was it was the drawing people in, you know, recognizing the resource, but also we were at the cusp of the crucial need all over the state for comprehensive planning and resource protection. And they had managed to, as part of the budget, sneak through smart growth legislation in Madison, and it was in effect, 98, I think, that it took effect. And as you might well imagine, out here in farmland, it's zoning is like the dirtiest word in the vocabulary. You know, telling me what to do with my land, it just wasn't going to work. So we started this listening sessions, is basically what it was, 2003. We did a lot of preliminary work. We trained a bunch of local people to be facilitators, and we set up three different locations, three different meetings. And we had gathered an incredible amount of information. Basically, what do you value about the place? What do you like to keep? What do you like to change? What's missing? kind of stuff, you know. One of the things that was missing was a community radio station, and here we sit. And that was how it started. It was brought up there by two people who are still involved, and it was realized, you know.
So through Kickapoo Conversations came WDRT.
Right. Also Driftless Art Festival was one of the things. There were a lot of practicing artists who had no particular place to, locally. They had to all travel to Madison or State Street Art Fair or something, you know. It was getting kind of burdensome. And so a lovely couple from Chicago, the Queebies, basically single-handedly pulled that together in a very classy fashion. And we had the Driftless Art Fair.
Isn't it interesting how an organization that's really rooted in water quality, but all the ways in which that spans out into bringing in community involvement, sure, ended up tying in a radio station, an art fair.
Well, it was quality of life all the way down the line. You know, people realized that it was every bit empowering to be able to say, well, this is what I'd like to see here, you know, and let's try to go at it this way. And people just, it was to sit in a room with 25 or 50 people, depending on which one of these sessions you were at. Some were bigger than others. And to realize there's that many kindred spirits that, you know, I mean, these are like people you've seen walking down the street and you never thought you had anything in common, you know? And they're all talking about the same things you care about, you know? And I always, in the back of my mind, thought a little bit about, having come from the newspaper, I knew a lot about, you know, they had the local news where you typed up, Ethel went to Bertel's for lunch and brought her three children, and, you know, the local news was part of the paper every week. So right away you knew who was related to who, and what was going on the local long-time undercurrent of things, you know. But here was the new locals, you know, this was the new faces, and a few older ones. But it was just really empowering for everybody to sit in that room and just take another half a step towards doing something in public, you know. It was very fun.
And I think you really touched on something that's been an overarching theme that I'm seeing through VSN since I started 2 years ago, is just the way in which, when you look at the impacts we all have on each other on a watershed scale, that watershed delineation, that boundary doesn't recognize political affiliations or any of the differences that we all might have. It's really we are all living in this community together, and the way that our work at VSN bridges those differences and bridges those gaps and brings people together that otherwise maybe wouldn't be sitting in a room having a conversation together. And it sounds like that was already a theme from the very beginning.
Very much so, very much so. And it kind of continued in other ways. I mean, it was almost as though it was the a gathering of spirit or faith, you know. It's like Mother Nature bats last, and we have to deal with how this is going to react, how everything is going to affect our life on the ground, you know. And it was pretty amazing, the different levels of knowledge that people brought. We had, you know, biology professors retired. We had artists, we had architects, we had just all manner of people who knew a lot about a lot of things. But what we really had that was great was two different Spanish majors who did an environmental studies minor, who worked like slaves in our little office and cranked out all this summary paperwork, typed up these little sheet after sheet of everybody's answers and everybody's responses and summaries, and it was really pretty fun, pretty good production. And we had, you know, free rent. Karen Dahl let us have upstairs of her lovely building over there for some time. And it was just, there were subtle levels of support in the community, which were very encouraging.
It's really significant, I think, that in this small community that we have, you know, this organization here that's doing so much. What do you think it is about this region that we're able to have such interest and such support for the work that we're doing, even in such a tiny town?
I think a lot of it is the basic draw that it is for so many people. You know, I was gathering nomination signatures one day at the co-op on a Sunday. I was amazed at the number of people who were just in town because they were car tripping or fishing. Oh, no, sorry, I don't live here. I can't sign your petition. It was amazing. It really was. but the people who come here because they need an open space, they need air, they need some place they can retire and relax. People who like to fish, who come here just periodically. People who come here anymore, there's quite a bit of people coming here for the music, you know, different forms of entertainment with people up on the ridge or in town. And the county parks have music. What? You know, I mean, it's just pretty powerful to a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. You're listening to Valley Stewardship Network's Conservation Connection show on 91.9 WDRT. I'm Beth Summers, and with me is Shelley Brenneman and Kathy Fairchild, and today we're discussing who is Valley Stewardship Network and what do we do? So great to get some of that early history, and that I'm currently the director, but some of this is information that I hadn't heard, so it's so exciting to get your perspective on.
It is always interesting to me that institutional memory is always kind of flat because you're trying so hard to go forward. You know, you don't look back. And so that I'm flattered that you asked.
I'd love to loop Shelley into the conversation too. Shelley's our conservation program specialist, but for quite a few years, she was actually the director. So she is passing her knowledge and information that she gained through years at VSN down to me. And Shelley, I'd love to hear kind of where VSN was at as you came in and how it's grown since then.
Sure. Well, we were very inspired to have Kathy's leadership, and unfortunately, at about the time I came on, Kathy was retiring, and so I only got to see her intermittently. But she remained a big inspiration for me and our board members, and so thank you for all of your vision and your leadership and the care that you gave VSN. When I came on, there was really 10 years of really great water quality data that had been collected all throughout the watershed, and some stellar volunteers that had collected that data, including like Paul and Bernadette Hayes, Ellen Brooks and Dave Hackett, Bruce and Sue Risto, and many others who had been out in the watershed, sort of being the eyes and ears and hearts of those waters, and really taking a look at, you know, what's special about this region and how can we have this data that shows that we have some really excellent water quality in some places that we need to protect. In other places, we have some work to do with the runoff in this very flood-prone region. You know, we've got runoff coming from lawns in town and in rural lands, and we all kind of have a part to play in helping reduce that runoff and reduce those flooding risks that we all have experienced. But we had this 10 years of data. Sarah Granger at that time had written a long report and summarized all that data, and so our volunteers and our staff members said, okay, great. So we have we sort of have characterized the watershed. What do we do next? And at that time, Tom Lukens came on board, and he was our longtime board chair who really had a vision about how when we think about water quality, it really begins in the uplands. And so if we want to impact water quality in a positive way, meaning protect and maintain really good water quality, we really need to think about the practices that happen in the uplands that, you know, are part of these watersheds where runoff is, you know, coming through, and practices can be put in place that protect water quality. And so I was hired. My background is I'm an Iowa farm girl. I have a sustainable agriculture degree. And so part of my role at VSN in the next sort of 10 years was to think about how we can partner with local folks who are farmers, landowners, community members. Many of these people who their families have stewarded this land for generations. And so what's special about this region is partly because there have been so many generations of folks who have stewarded that land and taken care of those land and waters and then maintained that great quality that we have that draws people in to visit and fish and experience what we have here today. So I also had a bit of a background in rural sociology, and so we really studied ways to get folks involved. You know, definitely Rob Horowitz continued to be an inspiration. I was very lucky to know Rob and hear about the ways that he's worked all around the world to bring community members into leadership positions in conservation. And we learned about a model called a watershed council around the nation, and really thought, boy, that sounds a lot like Rob's vision about community empowerment to do to serve as that leadership. And we really thought, wow, this could really work here. And so working with Vernon County Land and Water, working with lots of other folks in the community to identify who are the leaders in our farms and rural communities that, you know, might be willing to get more involved in watershed management and conservation leadership. So that has really taken off, and watershed councils, now we have 5 in our region, and it's really kind of taken our work at VSN from the sort of stream level, measuring water quality, kind of then to the farm level. When we started working with farmers kind of one-on-one to, instead of looking at water quality measurement as a what's wrong with the water quality, rather look at it, how can we take water quality data that shows how practices are beneficial? So basically measuring solutions to how conservation practices can show us data that shows that these practices such as cover crops, prairie filter strips, things like that can actually maintain and improve water quality. So we're really measuring the benefits of practices. So that was a shift to sort of the farm scale. And now with our work with watershed councils, it's sort of that watershed scale that we're working with community groups that are stewarding these watersheds on this watershed level and collaborating with each other sort of for the whole region. So, you know, it's sort of that empowerment and that involvement of folks that live on the land, that own the land and the water, these watersheds, really show a very long-term, sustainable way of keeping the environmental quality and social quality, all this quality of life, things that we all appreciate about this region. These are the leaders that will help continue that into the future.
Yeah, Shelley, I think you really hit it on the head there that the one of the most important aspects of our work is empowering community members and community groups to achieve their goals for conservation and creating the landscape that they want to live in. So it's not about us imposing our goals on them, but about helping community members to achieve what their vision is.
I think that goes to the basic founding concept too of servant leadership. You're not in this for glory or gain. You're in this to serve what needs to be served.
Yeah, well said.
Absolutely. Our VSN staff even went to Viterbo in La Crosse and took the servant leadership course,
right,
and really brought that into VSN to really, as Beth said, serve as a real support. You know, how can we help? Each of the watershed councils is unique in its own way, their goals and their projects, and how can we support each one of them and just, you know, provide technical assistance, provide some access to funding in some cases, provide outreach support. So lots of different ways that we support watershed councils. And continuing our water quality work, and I think Beth coming onto the scene in these next 10 years, looking out to doing more of the environmental monitoring and ecological monitoring that helps show how practices can really help not just water quality, but soil quality, pollinators, birds, soils, all the things that make up a high quality watershed. And so, we're getting excited about doing more of that. Some of the practices specifically that we started working with, some 10 years ago would be managed grazing, rotational grazing, and seeing how converting some row crop ground to perennial cover, really obviously helps reduce erosion and runoff. But I think one of the more exciting projects that we've worked on since 2016 is the implementation of prairie strips in the landscape. And Dave Creer has done a fantastic job with Tom Lukens in implementing prairie strips in many different areas. I think over 40 different prairie strips. And out at Sleepy Hollow Ford, you can see a great example of that, those prairie strips. But basically, the prairie strips serve to reduce runoff. They slow water down. They infiltrate water. They keep nutrients and sediment on the farm level. They provide pollinator and wildlife habitat. And I think it's a perfect example because those strips are kind of a win-win. They help keep a quality soil on the farm and helping farms be productive. They help to reduce runoff. They help keep the stream water quality clean. They help the trout habitat. They also help slow down water. As the Coon Creek Watershed Council says, you know, the more we can make running water walk, the better. The more we can slow water down in the uplands reduces the flood risk downstream in our communities. And so prairie strips seem to do it all. And so I think it's a really great example of a win-win for all of us with a prairie strip. So that's exciting looking forward as well.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up our future goal of increasing our ecological monitoring to really show and demonstrate the effectiveness of prairie strips and the other practices too that we promote. You know, coming in with my background in biological monitoring, I'm so excited to really grow that program of using data to demonstrate and forward these programs. It's really exciting to have tangible results showing that, yeah, they really are increasing water quality and helping control flood risk. Yeah, well, it's amazing to me that we are already in the 25th year of Valley Stewardship Network's existence in this coming year. That is just...
Believe how amazing it is to me.
Incredible, the work that's been done over the last 25 years and the snowball effect that some of this work is having, you know, the excitement that's being generated in the surrounding watersheds, in those watershed groups, and we now have 7 staff members. We're hosting a big 25th anniversary celebration this year, so we hope to have that well attended by community members and get the word out even more about our existence here in the community and the good work that we're doing.
And the modeling for organizations all over the country, I think, is really powerful, too. I hope that there's enough publicity for the effort that you're really getting recognized for it. You're doing a good work.
Thank you. Well, that means a lot coming from you, Kathy.
Not at all.